You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness to share tips about all things that can support you on your journey to becoming the best version of yourself and build a bulletproof mindset to get whatever you want out of life. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is going to be a Q&A, and I've pulled these questions from my Instagram, Brian Keane Fitness, and my Snapchat, BrianK019. So if you're not following me on there, definitely at the end of this episode, go check out both those platforms. And that's where most of the questions are coming in. And now on the new website, there's also an option to send in podcast questions on there too. So if you get a chance, head over to BrianKeyFitness.com and you can have a scroll through the new website. And in the contact form, there is a podcast or video question option where you can send in questions by email as well. But Snapchat and Instagram are definitely the best one to send them in on, particularly during Q&As, because I'm on there every day during the week. So first question comes in from Shane Hogan 13. How can I build muscle training at home? So I'm going to answer this one because I know there's a lot of people that are listening that train at home, and muscle building may be your goal, losing body fat may be your goal, toning up may be your goal. Whatever it is that you're trying to achieve, you can 100% do that training at home. The key is making sure that your training program and your nutritional plan is in alignment with the specific goal. Training in a gym or training at home nearly becomes irrelevant. It just means that you change up your training program that you're doing at home so that you're getting maximum output in alignment with whatever it is that you're trying to achieve. So for example, the rules for building muscle, again, there's lots of different factors that come into play, but the general rules are creating enough stimulation where you tear the fibers down, and then you use your nutrition, you use your rest and recovery to repair. You don't grow in the gym, you don't grow when you're doing resistance training at home, you grow when you build muscle when you're recovering from workouts. This goes for both genders, guys and girls. The only difference is guys tend to have a little bit more natural testosterone and can bump their calories a little bit higher and tend to fill out a little bit more. When girls build lean muscle, not in all cases, but in the 95% of cases, they get leaner in their body composition, so they look more athletic. Any bikini girls you see on magazines or on Instagram, it's normally they look so good because of their muscular tone. You don't get big and jacked by lifting weights. I know a lot of you listening here have already pushed past that misconception, but for those of you who are still not 100% sure, if you're a female, lifting weights doesn't make you bulky. Eating too much food and lifting weights and adding resistance will make you bulky. But as long as your nutrition is good and your training program is in alignment with trying to tone up and look leaner and look more muscular and look more toned, then lifting weights is going to help that. In terms of training at home, all you basically do is you move your parameters that you will be doing in the gym and you move it into a home environment. For example, in my GEA lean body program, near the whole workout, with the exception of one or two moves that we tweak for people, can be done at home. So I have my GEA players building muscle while they're training at home. We tie up their nutritional plan, make sure that's in alignment, that they're getting enough calories so that they can grow, their amino acids are high enough so that they can repair the fibers that they're tearing, and they're stimulating enough muscle at home in the right tempo and the right parameters so that they're able to improve the performance and build muscle. People that are coming through my normal BKF 90, my top 50 program, it's the same. There's a home version of that workout, and there's a majority of people that, as long as you have a set of dumbbells, you can do everything in that workout from home. Some people only have one or two sets of dumbbells or don't have a lot of weight where they can max out at 8 to 10 reps. So what we do is we slow down the tempo, or we change up the angles, or we'll add in an extra tri set or giant set so that you're able to stimulate the fiber teardowns that you need in order to change the composition of the muscle so that you can build more muscle on your frame. So you can 100% build muscle at home, particularly if you have the equipment. If you have a bench, you have a barbell, and you have a dumbbell, there's very few things that you can't do at home, provided that your training program is in alignment with trying to build muscle, and then you're, again, getting your nutrition dialed in, which is so important, because you can do the best workout plan in the world, and if you don't overlap your nutrition with it, you're not gonna maximize your results. So in terms of building muscle at home, your hypertrophy parameters can work really well, your 8 to 10 rep ranges, your 3 to 4 sets, your 60 to 90 second rest. At home, you may be limited with equipment, so it just means that you may add in some supersets or giant sets, is what I do with people in my normal fitness program, guys trying to build muscle that aren't sports, they're the general fitness, trying to build muscle in my BKF 90 program. So that's what we do, and we keep stimulation there and make use of the equipment that they have at home. The only area that you may struggle with is when you're doing it with body weight. Body weight's amazing at getting your heart rate up, and you can manipulate the movement patterns that you're doing, and you can add in high intensity exercises, your burpees, your push-ups, your pull-ups, and they all work tremendously well, particularly at getting your heart rate up, and they can tear fibers down, which can elevate your metabolism. But it can be a little bit harder to build muscle at home with just body weight. Again, depending on your genetics, some people have amazing genetics for size and putting on muscle, and they'll build muscle at home with body weight. A lot of the calisthenic guys that you'll see online have incredible genetics for building muscle, so they can do pure body weight and still change the composition and have a more muscular frame. Not everybody can do that though. So it's important to understand that the only handicap that you may have in trying to build muscle at home is if you're only using body weight and your genetics don't necessarily support that. So I would err on the side of caution with that, and make sure that you are loading with resistance and adding extra resistance that you need in order to tear the fibers down. And then you're using your nutritional plan, your food, your diet program you're following to make sure that you're eating all the food you need in order to build and repair anything you tear down so that you can build more muscle. So whether you do that in the gym, or whether you do that at home, or whether you do that in classes, or what, doesn't matter where you do it, as long as you have the systems in place, you're going to be able to get your body to respond. So hopefully anyone here looking to build muscle, guy, girl, looking to build muscle at home, hopefully this answer will give you a little bit more clarity and show you that it is 100% possible. You can go on my social media, and I'm sure there's loads of other trainers out there as well with people that come through the home variations and have built lean muscle, but they had their training in alignment with that, they had their nutrition in alignment with that, and they were using supplements that were going to support that. So just make sure it's all geared towards everything you're trying to achieve. You can't hit a target you can't see, but from the sounds of it, Shane, you know you want to build muscle, you know you're going to be doing it at home, so you just reverse engineer that plan so that you can achieve your goal. Next question comes in from Grammo94. What are your top three diet tips? Okay, so the first one is, because of the way the question's worded, is reframing the word diet to nutritional plan or strategy. Because diet, it's weird because we have this subconscious thought in our head, when we're following a diet, it's something we're doing for a period of time until we get what we want. Which is fine and does work for a lot of people. Like, you can go on a diet for 6 weeks and your body will transform and you'll change it. But the real success in a diet tip I'll offer somebody is reframing that and building a nutritional strategy that you can stick to long term. I know some of you have read my book, The Fitness Mindset. The nutrition section was the top nutrition book on Amazon on the Amazon Kindle, I think, for nearly 3 or 4 months. And with the bestseller on there. And the nutritional strategy and talk that I expand on in that book, and I've talked about on the podcast regularly, is the best diet program you'll follow is one that fits into your lifestyle and into your schedule, that includes foods that you enjoy, that is in alignment with your specific goals. And a small tip that can help you succeed long term is reframing the word diet into nutritional strategy, because long term success comes down to enjoying the process and being able to stick to it. I know I've hit success with people coming through my 90-day program, my top 50 or my BKF 90 program. I know I've hit success when people, when they get 6 or 7 weeks in and they're like, I haven't even thought about the nutrition. I'm like, okay, we've got it now, because you're using foods you like, it's fitting into your lifestyle and your schedule, you're using recipes from the recipe book, and you're able to stick to it long term. They're the people that message after 6-7 months having finished the plan and they're like, I'm still eating the same way, my body feels great, my energy levels are good, and I've now changed my goal and I'm trying to build muscle or tone up, or, you know, whatever the new goal may be. So that comes down to a reframing process of diet. It's why very rarely will I mention diet on any of my platforms or podcasts or in the book. I don't use that word because of the subconscious thought process that it's something that we will end up finishing after a certain period and certain date. So tip number one is a really simple reframe of changing the word diet to nutritional strategy or nutritional plan. Okay, the next tip then is changing up any processed food you're eating for the real high quality alternatives. And I'm going to expand on this, because there's a little bit of a difference between health and fitness. And I spoke about it, and I'll use the book for context because the nutritional strategy fleshes this out, and I'm going to expand on it even more here. The example that I use in the book was a microwave bag of rice. That when you have a microwave bag of basmati rice, for example, you're going to have certain preservatives and certain additives added to that bag so that it can have a longer shelf life. And normally what happens with those foods is they remove a lot of the fiber, or they remove a lot of the vitamins and minerals in order to put these preservatives in. So it's not necessarily the processing that's a problem. Processed foods, it's not processing that's going to cause any issues. It's what happens during that process. It's when they take the good ingredients out and add poor ingredients in. So what happens is you have a bag of basmati rice and the fiber has been taken out of it, so you nearly need to eat more of it to feel fuller. Whereas if you just got a bag of basmati rice that had nothing added to it and was just 100% basmati or whole grain rice, you're going to feel fuller and you're going to need to eat less of that, and you're going to get the vitamins and minerals that your body needs. And this is where fitness and health splits, because as long as you are getting your macros calculated, and I've had people come through my program that have had amazing transformations using things like protein bars, regularly drinking diet drinks, using cans of Monster pre-workout. It's not my favorite way to do it because it generally doesn't set up the long-term pattern that can support people over a extended period of time, but it works very well for some people. But you'll find that those same people will have a complaint of, right, my energy levels are sapped. I need the can of Monster or Red Bull to get my energy levels up. And I'm very, very clear with people in the beginning, we can factor these in. And when you're filling out, I have a check-in sheet on my BKF 90 program where you check in every week. And one of the stats on there is energy levels. And I'll see those people, their energy levels will be at a 5, and then it might go up to a 6, then it might go to a 4, as opposed to the alternative where I switch people on to higher quality foods and more, you know, vegetables or fruits for people that are eating those, complete protein sources that aren't coming from packets, and just a switch out of microwave meals for the healthier alternatives. And you'll find that their energy levels increase. They'll start at 4, they'll go to 5, they'll go to 7, they'll go to 8, and a lot of people are around that 8 to 10 depending on the week, depending on their life and environment that week, and their energy levels stay high. And one of the reasons that I'm so big on energy, and one of the subtitles in the book was Eat for Energy, Train for Tension, Manage Your Mindset, Reap the Results. Eat for energy is down to the fact that when you're keeping your energy levels stable during the day, you're way less likely to miss your workout, or when you are training, you're going to have a higher output, which means one of two things. One, you'll tear more fibers down by creating more resistance on the muscle, which means that you'll elevate your metabolism so you'll burn more calories throughout the rest of the day, or you'll elevate your heart rate higher, which means you'll burn more calories during the workout. Also, the other things in life don't tend to bother you as much when your energy levels are high. I know myself that I get wound up and I get stressed out if I haven't slept or I haven't eaten well, and little things tend to bother me. And I'm very aware of cortisol and the effect of the stress hormone cortisol on your body. It's the figurative death by a thousand cuts. There will be people that I work with that have done every nutritional plan, every training program. They're in a calorie deficit. They have everything right, but they've got a certain circumstance in their life that's causing them to be consistently stressed, and their cortisol is always elevated, and you're not going to be in peak performance for burning body fat or building muscle or improving your performance in general if you're constantly stressed out and your cortisol is too high. And that can come from not getting quality ingredients into your body. A lot of people will have things like a magnesium deficiency. We have a lot of processed foods, a lot of things in our environment now. Majority of people will walk around with a magnesium deficiency. If you eat a lot of sugar, every molecule of sugar you consume pulls the magnesium out of your body. So one of the things that I'll regularly do is when I'm training now, I'm doing the Marathon de Sabla in April, which is a 256-kilometer race through the Sahara Desert in Morocco. And I'm eating 2 bars of white chocolate every day to keep my calories high. And again, my body burns through it like throwing paper on a fire. But I'm very aware that sugar, and even though it's raw cane sugar, it's still going to pull the magnesium out of my body. So I 100% supplement back in my magnesium every single day I have those bars of chocolate, because it winds down my central nervous system and can calm me down. I take it before bed, about an hour before bed, and it just calms my central nervous system and it works very, very well. So one of the reasons that I switch to those higher quality ingredients with people that I work with, or higher quality foods with people I work with, is because it keeps your energy levels high. By all means, you can get into tremendous shape using microwave foods and using the less high quality alternatives, but you may not be able to keep your energy levels as high as you like, and then your training can suffer, your life can suffer, your cortisol can elevate, and it is just something that is worth nipping at the beginning so that it doesn't set you back and it sets you up long term for success in terms of whatever it is you're trying to achieve: lose body fat, improve performance, build muscle, or a combination of all three. The last diet tip then is, if you're someone who's unsure on nutrition, do one of two things. Either spend the time investing in yourself to expand your knowledge on nutrition and what foods will work well for your body, and then build your nutritional strategy, or go to a coach, go to a trainer, go on a program, go to a nutritionist, go to somebody who will build that program with you or for you so that you have a baseline to work from. I'm not saying that's necessarily my program. You may not resonate with my nutritional strategies, and there may be someone in your gym or another trainer or a nutritionist or someone online who you really, really resonate with. But if you're struggling with that area, it's worth investing the income to make sure that that's specific to what you're trying to achieve, so you're taking the guesswork out of it. And again, it doesn't necessarily have to be an investment in money. It may be an investment in time, where you're listening to different nutritional podcasts or different books that you're reading or consuming different nutritional videos. Whatever it is, it's expanding your knowledge on what your body needs to achieve your specific goal. So the last diet tip I would offer is either invest the time or the money to make sure that you are finding what is working for you. You're eating the foods that are in alignment with your goals. You're not eating too many or too little calories. And again, that's a problem on both sides. If you're trying to build muscle and you're not growing, you're probably not eating enough calories. If you're trying to lose body fat and you're not responding, you're probably eating too many calories, or else there's something else off in your training program or hormonally or genetic that you need to fix or put a plan in place around. So I would advise, as tip number three, is invest the time or the knowledge to make sure that your nutritional strategy isn't something that just happens to you, and it's something that you've consciously made the decision that, well, I'm eating these foods, I'm using these recipes because it's specific for me and it's working for what I'm trying to achieve in terms of my goals. And they are probably my top three diet tips for anyone, regardless of what the end goal is. Okay, next question comes in from Alan Daly. What pre-workouts do you recommend to people? So I've been asked variations of this question on the podcast before, and I'm going to expand and flesh it out a small bit now. Pre-workouts and fat burners are very, very hard supplements to recommend to people, purely because everyone responds very, very differently. Also, those supplements that tend to massively rev up your central nervous system's response. It's why you feel so alert when you take a pre-workout or a fat burner, the equivalent. And it's very, very hard to recommend it to people because one man's meat is another man's poison in terms of pre-workout. And the example I always use is the BSN Inno Explode. I had Paul, who's Paul and Orla on Instagram and Paul and Orla podcast. He came through my mentorship program a while back, and he used to be a huge fan of BSN Inno Explode. Like, he thought it was the best thing since sliced bread. And that pre-workout used to make me sick every single time I took it, whether it was the ingredients or the sweeteners. It just turned my stomach, and I would literally, halfway through workouts, I'd have to run to the toilet. Whereas he loved it and it worked incredibly well for him. Now, I love the Flexi Fury. That's one of my favorite pre-workouts, and it works very well for me. It gives me a stable, clean energy, and I use it consistently on my lifting days because I know what I'm going to get from it. Whereas Paul, for example, takes that and doesn't get the same hit that I get. Even though he likes it, he doesn't love it. So it's important to find out what works best for you. And also that pre-workouts should enhance your workout, but they shouldn't be the thing that you need to keep your energy levels up. One of the biggest issues with pre-workouts is, and I use a number scale on 1 to 10 to kind of give a little bit of broken down thought on this, is if you're taking a pre-workout because your energy levels are at a 4 and you need to move them up to a 7 or 8 just to train, that's probably a sign that there's something else off in your lifestyle, your nutrition, or your recovery, or your sleep. So it's worth evaluating that first. If you're doing that consistently, where you're like consistently taking pre-workout or stimulants to get through your workout because you're fucked and you've no energy, that's a sign something's off in your nutritional strategy or your recovery or your sleep. So it is worth looking at. However, if you use pre-workouts to move you from a 7 to a 9, that can massively optimize your body's ability to respond and get better workouts, because that's how pre-workouts were meant to be used. So I would ask yourself, before I even recommend anyone that you look out for, or ingredients to look out for, is why are you using your pre-workout? My general rule is, and I'm not necessarily saying this is the best rule, but it's what I use, is on the days I feel I don't need a pre-workout are the days I take it. And I know that sounds really counterintuitive, but normally the days I feel I need a pre-workout, my body is telling me that I'm not ready to train today, or I'm not ready to go to that limit today because my central nervous system or my muscular system or something is fatigued and I'm not ready. I haven't slept well enough the night before. I haven't eaten enough food. I've been overtraining. And if I need to take that pre-workout to get through a workout, I know it is probably the time that I need to take a rest day, or I need to do a recovery day. I need to do something that's going to get me back on track. And then when I feel like I don't need the pre-workout, that's when I take it, because it moves my energy levels from an 8 to a 10, and that's why my workout intensity can stay so high. So that's kind of my rule. Sometimes I'll break it if I've been traveling across different time zones and I need to get my workout in to clear my head. So there's an exception to every rule, but my 80% of the time, that's how I choose my pre-workout, is when I feel I don't need it, that's when I take it. And in terms of ingredient list, the only thing I would advise is, you're not going to get one pre-workout that works for everybody. And if you do, realistically, it's probably going to be taken off the market pretty quickly. I remember the old Jack 3D, which had the 1.3-diethylmethylene, which got banned since, and you can't get it anymore. That used to, because it was a raver's drug, it used to make you feel euphoric and used to feel like a god when you took it. And it now had terrible effects in the body. Like, I used to get bouts of minor depression after it. You used to get a thing called stim dick, where you literally couldn't get enough blood flow to your, you know, penile area or fucking anywhere in your body, because it was flowing everywhere else for that hour, 2 hour period after you worked out. So it could have that really negative response, but your workouts were insane. So again, it wasn't worth the trade-off for me. When I started looking at forums, this is 6, 7, 8 years ago, and I realized that people were having the same problem, I stopped taking it, and then it got banned 6 months later. Those pre-workouts tend to work for most people, but I would advise experimenting with the ones that work for you. Most pre-workouts are just going to be a combination of caffeine, creatine, beta-alanine, some of L-arginine in there, some might have some branched chain amino acids in there, citrulline malate for muscle pump, taurine for cramps. There's lots of different ingredients that tend to show up in most pre-workouts. So I can't recommend one as such. I like Flexi Fury and it works very well for me, but the best advice I can offer is similar to when you're getting a protein powder first, is go into a supplement shop and buy 3 or 4 different samples of pre-workouts and experiment with them, and the ones that you feel the best with, and don't just base your workout, how good the workout was, off whether you decide to buy a full tub of a pre-workout, because there's other factors. Did your energy levels crash after? Were you a little bit down or low after? All of these things come into play in choosing a pre-workout. The reason that I use the Flexi Fury is I don't get a crash. It doesn't make me feel low, and it gives me just enough energy to move me from an 8 or a 9 to a 10. And that works tremendously well for me. The really potent pre-workouts, particularly the ones that have small scoops, tend to be very, very heavily stim-based, which means there's not a lot of high-quality ingredients. So the first time you take it, it'll probably send you to the moon, and then 2 weeks later, you'll take 3 scoops and it won't do anything. The scooper tends to be quite a good gauge on quality of ingredients, because if you've got a big scooper, you're going to get creatine in there, you're going to get some beta-alanine in there, and there'll be a higher quality supplement ingredient list for the majority of cases, and the tiny little scoops where you're getting this unbelievable infinite, what feels like infinite energy in this tiny little scoop, is normally just stimulants, and you will end up burning out a lot of those receptors in a week or two, and they just won't work anymore. So that's kind of my takeaway tip on pre-workouts and how to recommend them, without recommending 3 or 4 different brands that I use, because the truth is I only use the one, and then I'll alternate that between that and cups of coffee and MCT oil. So hopefully that helps, Alan, and anyone else trying to choose a pre-workout. Okay, next question comes in from Angie on Instagram. My knee hurts when I run on the road. What can I do? So before I go in and offer any advice from my side, the truth is, anytime you have any sort of injury, a physio is always going to be your best bet. So again, I'll offer some advice and some tips that I see regularly with people that come through my programs and people I work with, and just my own knowledge on biomechanics and the normal common causes of running on the road and why your knee hurts. But if something is bothering you, particularly if it's something consistently long term, look into having a physio look at it. I have 2-3 people who I rotate between, and they, every time anything ever tweaks on me, I go to them because they're incredible at what they do. Adrian Craddock in Galway, Trade Lahey in Galway, Cara Mullins. I literally just rotate between the three, depending on their schedule and depending on getting appointments. So in terms of your knee hurting on the road, normally what happens with a lot of people when they're feeling that their knee is sore from road running, it's normally down to an impact on your tendon underneath your kneecap that is just getting inflamed every time you hit a hard surface. So there's a couple of things that are worth looking into that you can probably fix on your own, that are worth experimenting with, and a couple of things to look into in terms of the overall cause. Because you can roll out your IT band, which is a band that comes down the side of your leg and ties in underneath your kneecap. And normally what happens with a lot of people is when they foam roll and do some myofascial release on their IT band, it takes all that pain out of their knee temporarily. Now, it's an amazing strategy for if you have to go for a run, or when you come back from a run, or you wake up the following day and your knee is sore, because it gives you nearly instant relief when you loosen out that IT band. What happens is it tightens up. So if you picture a long piece of string that should be loose, what happens is when you tighten a piece of string, it pulls underneath the tendon in your knee, and that can get inflamed. It can make your tendon inflamed. It can give you knee pain when you run on a road. So that is one thing you can do straight away, but it's normally not the cause. The cause generally comes from, in a lot of cases, and again, always go to your physio because they'll be able to recommend and see how you're biomechanically made up, and they'll be able to suggest what may be going on. But in a lot of cases that I've found, particularly with my athletes, my GA players, this is really, really common, and a couple of my runners who do half marathons that come through my BKF 90 program, is down to one, their glutes not activating and firing. And what can happen is if your glutes aren't activating and engaging and firing in the way that they should, it can put a compensation or super compensation elsewhere, where the other parts of your body have to work harder in order just to make up for your glutes not activating. So for example, your hamstrings can get tight, your lower back can get tight, your hips can start to roll forward into an anterior pelvic tilt, your quads can tighten up, and as a result your IT band gets too much strain and too much stress, and can inflame the tendon underneath the knee. So by activating your glutes, by building a program where you are making sure that you're building that mind muscle connection with your glutes, and you're pulling everything back into alignment in terms of your hips, that can be one way of fixing the problem, or the long term problem of why your knee hurts when you run. The other one that's worth looking at is your footwear. A lot of cases it's either one of two, either poor footwear that you're running it, so you don't have enough support when you're actually impacting and hitting the ground, or alternatively it can be from a slight pronation in your foot, which basically means that where your foot should be slightly arched up, it pronates inwards, so it rolls inwards every time you hit the ground, and you hit a hard surface particularly, it's putting extra strain through your hips, it's putting extra strain through your IT band, and it's tightening up because your foot isn't hitting the ground in the way that it's supposed to. So some people will find things like orthotics or insoles will help them. Other people will find just switching to a strong trainer. It's funny because I'm not massively big on spending massive amounts of money on different fitness equipment, but the one thing that I'll never ever cheap out on is a pair of trainers when I'm running, or just training in general, because of the importance of, I've had 3 knee surgeries, I know what it's like to rehab out the other side, and prevention is better than cure in a lot of cases. And having good footwear, particularly when you're running on a hard surface like a treadmill or the road, can be the literal difference between having knee pain and not having knee pain. So there's a couple of things there that you can add in straight away. See how they feel, see how they work for you. But best advice I can offer is get a physio to look at you, particularly someone who's very highly trained, that's very good at what they do. Work off referrals and different people that you've heard are particularly good with knee injuries, and in 99 out of 100 cases that physio will be able to either design a gym program, or they'll be able to offer some advice, or they'll be able to do a deep tissue or some form of acupuncture or release that will allow that extra strain to come off your knee. But try rolling it out yourself as well. Try making sure that your glutes are okay and activating. You'll know purely because if you can't squeeze and activate your glutes in any movement, it's possibly coming from that. And if you're running in poor footwear or you know your foot pronates inwards, the test that I use with people that come through my programs is if you feel comfortable up on the arches of your feet when you're just standing normal, it's probably a sign your foot's pronating inwards. For example, my feet slightly pronate inward. That's why I use ASIC runners when I run, because they've got that arch support. Because I'm really comfortable in a standing position when I'm rolled up on my feet, more so than standing straight. And that's normally a surefire sign instantly that you're pronating inwards. So I'd have a look into that, and hopefully that helps. So next question comes in from Mark Bucket 90 on Instagram. Is the organic white chocolate you eat healthier than the normal chocolate? So I know there's a lot of you following my Instagram on here, and I put a lot on Instagram stories. I've been super active on Instagram stories. Instagram stories and Snapchat are probably my two most active platforms at the minute, and I put up different content on both. Do more Q&As on Snapchat, and I do more kind of lifestyle stuff that I'm doing during the day on Instagram stories, so be sure to check out both. And I regularly put up that organic white chocolate from Green and Blacks that I eat. And the truth is, it's over the last probably 2 months, because my training for the Marathon de Sable that I mentioned earlier, because I'm hitting so much volume with my runs, like I'm running between 50 and 100 kilometers a week on top of my gym sessions, and my metabolism is like a fire at the minute. So I eat the white chocolate because it keeps my calories high and it gets my carbohydrates up, because even eating cleaner alternatives just sits in my stomach at times because of the amount of calories I've been eating to try and maintain the muscle that I have and keep my energy levels high. So the organic white chocolate, the truth is, the only real difference is instead of normal processed sugar, the organic white chocolate is made with raw cane sugar. So it may be slightly better, but it's not in a high enough percentage of being better to justify eating that instead of regular chocolate. For me, the reason that I eat the organic white chocolate is because I love the taste. I think it tastes fucking awesome. Like, so that's why I use that. I also find it doesn't inflame my gut as badly as other regular chocolates that I used to eat. So that's another reason why I normally go with it. But in terms of, is it healthier? It may be 5%, 10% healthier because it's organic raw cane sugar as opposed to normal processed sugar, table sugar, sucrose. But it's very, very small percentage. So it is something that's worth not fooling yourself into thinking, well, it's fine, I can eat all the white chocolate I want, it's organic, it's fine. That's the only issue I would have with that. And I'm aware sometimes when I put up a Snapchat or an Instagram photo that's out of context, it's why I expand on it as much as I can, because sometimes you won't have seen the 20 kilometer run I did that morning and then the leg workout I did in the evening. And that's why I'm able to eat 200 grams of white chocolate on top of my meals and just burn through it like paper to a fire. So it is very much down to building your nutritional strategy around whatever your goals are at the time. If I wasn't running that amount of distance, I wouldn't be eating 2 bars of white chocolate every day or every few days. So again, always reverse engineer whatever strategy you use based out of what your end goal is and the training program you're following. Okay, next question comes in from Oha on Snapchat. I have a pain in the front of my shoulders when I do presses. How can I fix it? Okay, so very, very similar to the knee question. And the reason I put the two of them in this podcast is I've kind of already given that disclaimer on get a physio to look at it, because they're always going to be your best person, as opposed to me offering specific advice, not knowing every little bit of circumstance and how you're biomechanically made up. But what I can offer is it's very, no more than knee pain when you're running on a road. It's a super common injury that's normally pretty easy to fix. So hopefully the advice and tips and tricks that I offer here will help you for anyone that has that front shoulder pain or that rotator cuff pain. But if it's not helping, by all means, go to a physio and get it looked at. So normally what happens with the front shoulders getting too tight, it's normally a rotator cuff issue. So a lot of people will find sometimes when they're going into shoulders, just doing some rotator cuff movements, so that where you're literally grabbing a light dumbbell and you're just moving from a punch position, arms locked out and then going straight up, can get a little bit of blood flow and a little bit of synovial fluid into the joint. And then you can progress on to doing a normal shoulder workout, provided that you do the warm-up sets and the movement pattern. And once there's enough lubrication in the joint, it doesn't bother you. However, some people move past that where it doesn't matter what they do, they get that rotator cuff and front shoulder pain. What I would look into is normally what happens in a lot of cases is if you're getting that rotator cuff and front shoulder pain, it's coming from a muscular tightness elsewhere, and it's normally either side of that rotator cuff or the front delt, your front shoulder. So your trap and your upper pec tend to be the two. So if you see an anatomy chart and the way your body's built, you'll see that you've got your trapeze that's coming in, you've got your front delt, that rotator cuff region, and your upper pec is tying directly into that. So what happens is you get a super incredible tightness through your upper pec or your traps, and that can give a lot of front shoulder pain and any movement pattern you do. So it's pretty easy to fix, provided there's no underlying issue genetically or injury from compact that you are contact where you were playing a sport and you literally set your body out of alignment in some way. Normally it's a repetitive strain from lifting one plane of motion or going too heavy and jerking a weight downwards or upwards. So what I would look into again and trial out is using some form of trigger point tension that's going to help release either side. So for example, I don't know if you play sport, but in the recovery strategy of my GA Lean Body program, particularly the hurling version, because there's a lot more upper body movements in terms of keeping that region super loose, it's very, very important because of the repetitive movement patterns that you're doing, that part of your shoulder can get tight. And in the recovery, we have trigger point tension on the trap and on the upper pec. So I'll implore you to try this and see if it works. Grab a slither or a lacrosse ball or some form of hard circular ball that fits into the palm of your hand, and try releasing your upper pec and try releasing your trap. So the best way to do this that I found is if you find a wall where you are literally where the wall is broken off, so like the door frame of the bathroom door or your bedroom door, where you're able to get a slither into your trap, you go into a rugby tackle position and you literally press in against the slither, the hard ball, and you start twisting your neck inwards and outwards in a rotational pattern and start releasing all that tension through the trap. You'll know, because if you don't have any issues with your front with the front of your shoulders and you don't have any tightness, you won't feel anything. But if that feels like somebody's sticking a knife into you, it's like, well, that's probably where your shoulder pain is coming from. And the same thing goes for your upper pec. What I normally do is I go into an upright position, I'll put the slither into my upper pec, I'll put one arm behind my back, and then I'll press into the wall, and then I'll move it along the fibers of my chest and my pectorals until I find that point that releases it. And again, it's the same. If you have no issue, you won't find anything there. But if you press up against it and it's sore and it feels like something's stabbing you with a knife, it's direct feedback that right, that muscle is too tight and needs to be loosened. You can go to a physio, and any good physio will be able to release it on both sides, and it normally fixes pretty quickly in a couple of sessions. But some people might not want to go to someone physical, or they might not have the time or the money, or for whatever reason, I'm not sure of your situation. So it's worth experimenting with it yourself and seeing. And if it's not healing, then by all means progress and get somebody to look at it. But you may find if it's not in a in a case where it's been at you for a long period of time and it's a long term injury, that may be enough just to get the looseness back, and it'll take all that pain out of your front of your shoulders. And it's very important to stay on top of that so that you're not having any difficulty or long-term issue when you are training shoulders or upper body movements. Okay, next question comes in from Anonymous. How can I get over fear? You know, I want to do something, but I get afraid. Please keep this anonymous, as I don't want my friends to see. So I've spoken on podcasts in the past, I've spoken in my book, The Fitness Mindset, in the mindset section about fear. And one of the things that really helps me in my life is understanding the acronym for FEAR, that fear is false evidence appearing real. And there's a big difference between being afraid and on being anxious towards something that may happen potentially in the future. And we sometimes get them mixed up, because fear is normally there's an external threat. There's a tiger or a lion or something physical that can fucking maul you. And anxiety is the thought that something may happen where there's no actual immediate physical threat. And again, it's hardwired in your psychology, it's hardwired in your biology. The reason that I use the tiger and the lion is because you're basically just an evolved version of a 10,000 year old self, where people have this innate biological driver of fear, and we tend to run away from the things that we're scared of because that kept you alive thousands of years ago. But we're in a society now, we're in a life now where we have our own worst enemies living between our two ears. And we end up getting into our own head and we get scared. And even though we know we want to do something, we're afraid. And what I would implore you to do is start pulling back the curtain on what is it that you're afraid of. And there's a couple of strategies that I'm going to offer here in the hopes that they help. One thing that is worth, before I offer any strategy and is worth considering, is that a lot of fear is just down to an over stimulation of your own thought process and what other people are going to think about what you're doing, effectively giving a shit about what people think about you. And when you're constantly living your life based out of what other people's opinions of you should be or what they may think of you, the one thing I can guarantee you in life, and again, there's lots of different books, there's lots of different gurus out there that will offer you life tips on how to be happy. I have some things that I live by myself, but the one thing I can fucking guarantee you how to be miserable is you go through your whole life living off other people's opinions of what you should do. There's a great book that I just finished called The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. And number one was, I wish I had the guts, or I wish I had the balls, or I wish I had the nerve to live life on my own terms. And that's what fear effectively is. And one of the things that helps and supports me is I make every decision that I do out of my 97-year-old rule. I actually try and make every decision on who I spend time with, what I spend my time doing, who I want to be with, what I want to do, and where I want to be off the 97-year-old rule. And what if I was on my deathbed now and pulled myself back, would I regret not doing that? Because if that's the case, then I just fucking go into it. The truth is, everybody, and I'm not saying just me, and again, you're your own best example, it's why I'm using myself for context, is everybody feels the fear. It's just that successful people, or what quote unquote from the outside world look like successful people, they don't let it stop them. That's the only fucking difference, is they feel the fear and they do it anyway. You know, one of the things that helps me, and you've heard on the podcast before, if this isn't the first time listening, is that smart people learn from their mistakes and the really sharp people learn from the mistakes of others. And I'm big on learning vicariously through other people. The truth is, you can go through life and you have to learn from mistakes, but nobody said they had to be your fucking mistakes. And when I read different books like autobiographies of some of the world's greatest thinkers and the way that they approach their life, you start to realize that they were afraid too. Reading books about Alexander the Great, reading books about Leonardo da Vinci, reading books about Steve Jobs, these people all felt the fear. They were all terrified when they were making jumps on things that they were doing. But we put them on a pedestal and think that, well, they don't feel that. They all fucking feel it. And then when you're learning vicariously through other people, it allows you to make the decisions that you should be doing, whatever it is that your life calling was, because those people felt the same thing. They just didn't let it stop them. So when you stop getting out of your own way, or start getting out of your own way, and you stop letting your own enemy live between your two ears and realize that fear is false evidence appearing real, and you stop caring what everybody thinks about, that it doesn't fucking matter, because at 97 years old, if you're on your deathbed, the decisions you made and everything that you've done up to this point, none of that shit fucking matters if it doesn't affect you and the person that you were supposed to become. So what I would advise anybody who's struggling to get over fear about doing the things they want, do one of two things. One, ask yourself, what are you genuinely afraid of? Because asking those questions, and I spoke about this in the mindset section of my book, that leaning into the questions, and Tony Robbins says that we are our questions. Ask better questions and get better answers. When you lean into the discomfort of that feeling of fear and start pulling back the fucking curtains on why you're feeling it. Is it because your mom told you you couldn't? Is it because your dad told you you couldn't? Is it because your family members won't support support you. Why the fuck are you afraid? Start pulling that curtain back. And I'm going to guarantee you it's not going to be comfortable, but it's the same as a workout. The reason I love fitness and the reason that I love training is it's a metaphor for everything in life. When you go into the gym and you push past your discomfort, when you push past that comfort level, that's when your body changes. That's when you build muscle. That's when you lose body fat. That's when you get fitter. That's when you get stronger. You're leaning into discomfort and you're changing as a result. Mindset is the exact same. Leaning into those questions that why are you afraid and what are you afraid of can pull it back. Because when you're able to pull the curtain back, you can see it for what it truly is. And it's normally false evidence appearing real. It's normally you making up a story about the worst case scenario that could happen. And the last thing that I will offer is start weighing up what is the genuine worst case scenario. Because what happens is, in our own head, when we break it down and we go to the future and we literally live in that vision of the worst case scenario of what happens, it's never as fucking bad in real life. And when you see everything that you do, the jobs that you take, the courses you decide to go on, the people you follow, the seminars you do, the people you surround yourself with, all of these things, when you're stressing and worried and afraid of doing something, it all comes back to being afraid of some story that you've told yourself of how the event may go. Normally, when you actually process it and live it out and talk it with, I speak regularly that you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with, and it's important to have a close circle of five people and somebody you can turn to. Some people don't have that. So use the likes of me, use other people that are trying to serve and help in every way that they can. Use those people to support the inversion of what it is that you're trying to achieve and break down whatever it is that you're afraid of into its actual component parts. When you go into the future and you think that, well, worst case scenario, I see this guy or this girl that I'm attracted to on the other side of the bar. What is the worst case scenario if I go up and talk to them? And then when you do a cost benefit analysis and weigh up the pro side, it tends to massively outweigh the downside. The downside is you go up to that guy or girl and they laugh at you, they throw a drink in your face, and you get a little bit of embarrassed for 10 minutes and then everybody forgets about it 5 minutes later or 20 minutes later because they go back living their own life, is what everybody fucking does. But you now know that, well, I didn't feel comfortable there and I pushed myself out of my comfort zone, and now I know that that person definitely isn't for me. And it's a direct feedback. If a girl or a guy throws a drink in your face and tells you to fuck off because you talk to them, you have a direct feedback that that's not the kind of person that you should be around. So you learn every time. You don't fail. You either fail or you either move forward or you progress or you learn. And when you reframe failure as just one other way that didn't work, and you start leaning into it, and you start weighing up the pro sides, and you weigh up the cost and the benefit, and you realize that that person you end up to at the bar, the best case scenario, they could end up being your life partner that you spend the rest of your life with, and is the reason for you being on this planet. That's how it could happen. And when you start looking at everything that way, when you weigh up every decision you make, the people you surround yourself with, the jobs you take, the potential partners you go out with, all of these things, and you weigh up the cost benefit, and you realize that the worst case scenario is never as bad as you actually think, and the upside massively outweighs the downside, and all your fear was a story you told yourself of false evidence appearing real, then it tends to just completely dissipate, and you realize that everything that you've ever been afraid of and all the limitations that you've created and all the stories you told yourself, you did that. You thought that, and they're stories that you have. They're not the way the world is. It's not the physical universe. It's not the physical reality. It's what's going on up in your head. And the last piece of advice I will offer is don't let your worst enemy live between your two ears. Okay, so that's everything on today's episode. A little bit of a longer one today, so definitely hit me up on Snapchat and Instagram. Let me know how you're finding these longer Q&As, just because of a couple of questions that have been coming in and I wanted to put them into the podcast and go a little bit longer form. Be sure to hit me up and let me know. Snapchat, BrianK019, and Instagram, either DM or comment on the post, is definitely the best place to get me. I check those every day, every morning. So massive thank you again for listening. For more information on my program, you can head over to BrianKeenFitness.com. My Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram is all Brian Keen Fitness. My Snapchat, as I mentioned, is BrianK019. Thank you so much for listening. Catch you all real soon.